questions. It actually happened in a roundabout way. In my 30-plus years of practicing medicine, I have come to the conclusion that the problems we have with our health are actually caused by very small things. This is particularly true of big health problems. Once more with feeling, very small things like lectins can cause huge health problems. And it was a simple observation by one of the earliest adopters of my original dietary program that started me down a path that resulted in this book. The tests I order on all my patients reveal many patterns that have helped me understand what is happening to our collective health. But it wasn't until I worked with a patient by the name of Tony that I experienced my eureka moment. Tony was a strikingly fit, energetic, mostly vegetarian. He called himself a flexitarian man in his early 40s who had fully adopted my principles. As a result, he was eating lots of greens and banishing grains and pseudograins, potatoes and other starches, as well as beans and other legumes. He had also dramatically cut back on fruit and seeded vegetables, which, as you now know, are botanically fruits. Tony had also upped his intake of fish, shellfish, fish oil, olive oil, avocados, and macadamia nuts. Like all of my patients, Tony experienced improved vitality and athletic performance shortly after starting the program, and he lost 10 pounds. But Tony suffered from vitiligo, a skin condition in which pigmentation is lost. That's why Michael Jackson, who suffered from the same problem, became paler and paler over the years. Vitiligo is caused by the gradual destruction of the pigment-producing cells of our skin called melanocytes, which are modified nerve cells that migrate to our skin in the embryonic stage of development. Why these nerve cells die in people with vitiligo was unknown at the time, but an autoimmune process was suspected. The term autoimmune process is the catchphrase used to describe how the body's immune system gets confused and begins attacking its own cells. Patients with autoimmune disease are told that their immune system is making a mistake. In Tony's case, his melanocytes were being treated as if they were foreign invaders and had to be killed, leaving him with patches of unpigmented skin. And to be sure, his immune system was doing a good job of killing the cells it had misidentified. Now, I've seen just about everything in my years as a physician, and I like to think of myself as pretty unflappable. But I was shocked to see and hear what happened when Tony started on my diet. Within weeks, he saw the pigment return to his skin. That's right, his vitiligo vanished, or more properly, reversed itself, and his skin pigmentation returned to normal. How did that happen? Frankly, I didn't know at the time. I did know that my dietary protocol was highly anti-inflammatory, but that didn't explain the resolution of Tony's vitiligo. Thousands of years ago, Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine, had described the body's ability to heal itself, which he called viriditas, green life force. He believed that the physician's job was to identify which forces were keeping the patient from healing himself and then remove them. Viriditas would take it from there. Clearly, Tony's new eating habits had removed the roadblocks to his body repairing itself. There was Viriditas in action, right before my eyes. So, back I went to the review of my research, specifically my xenotransplantation research as a pioneering surgeon in the art of heart transplants. What was in my program, or what wasn't in his new diet, that made Tony's body stop attacking his melanocytes? Had he added something, or had he removed the external force that was preventing his body's natural process of self-healing? Based on my transplant knowledge, I picked door number two, the removal of an external force. But what was the external force? A word of explanation is in order. Most people with various health problems believe that certain foods or supplements are anti-inflammatory, meaning that they dampen inflammation. What I was looking for is the actual cause of inflammation, which, if Hippocrates is right, and he is, would stop inflammation in its tracks. In other words, it wasn't that my diet was quelling the inflammation in Tony's body, which most healing diets purport to do. It was, in fact, that my diet was removing the root causes of inflammation, and once those were removed, his body was capable of healing itself without the need for any anti-inflammatory compounds. This seemingly small discovery will change how you think about how your body functions. Clearly, inflammation was causing Tony's problem, but where did the inflammation come from? Strange as it seems, what I discovered was that there was inflammation in his melanocytes because they look suspiciously like lectins to the immune system. Tony's immune system had been attacking his melanocytes because, through no fault of their own, they bore a striking resemblance to lectins. And because my diet had purged lectins, the cause of the inflammation was removed. Over hundreds of millions of years, plants have evolved a strategy of creating proteins like lectins that bear a striking resemblance to critical structures in their predators. When lectins get through the gut wall, they activate the immune system, which starts shooting without first asking questions. And that means it may shoot both at the lectins and also at the critical structures that resemble the lectins. Don't forget that one of the original purposes of lectins is to prompt an immune response on the nerves of an insect to paralyze it. In this instance, Tony's melanocytes, remember, they are modified nerve cells, were being misidentified as foreign. It was a case of mistaken identity, or what scientists call molecular mimicry, and it led to my eureka moment. Once Tony eliminated lectins, normalcy returned. I now knew lectins were causing this problem. But how did they get into Tony's body from his gut in the first place? Pattern matching. Pattern matching, a term borrowed from the computer science field, refers to the act of checking a sequence of items to find the constituents of a pattern. It happens every time you search for information on the internet using Google, Bing, or Ask. As you enter each keystroke, the search engine pattern matches and offers up what you appear to be looking for. The more information you type in, hopefully the better the match. But, as you know, the search program often mismatches, sometimes in frustrating or humorous ways. For example, perhaps you are planning a wedding and start to enter the words white flowers, but the search engine jumps the gun and offers up content on white flower. That wasn't quite what you had in mind. You will recall that I found strikingly common patterns in all my female patients' medical complaints, as well as in their eating habits. And many of the findings that I presented in Dr. Gundry's Diet Evolution came from observing patterns in blood tests, particularly for triglyceride and cholesterol levels that matched people's food choices. These patterns were predictable each and every time and in every person. This observation is so important that I am repeating it here, and you will understand the full implication when you get to part two. The patterns followed simple time-of-year food availability and predicted whether the body was in a store fat for the upcoming winter during the summer mode or burn fat to survive the winter mode. The choices of food, even the sweetness of food, communicated with our cells via pattern matching about which season it was, and we responded accordingly, either by gaining weight, summer, or burning calories in the form of fat for energy, winter. Pattern matching is the secret to how every living organism, no matter how small or large, operates. And by using those sophisticated blood tests, I came to realize that pattern matching and my ability to measure their effects on my patients underlie most positive or negative health states. Immune system scanners on patrol. We've come to know only in the last few years that your immune system uses quite simple scanning systems that look for and match patterns. I mentioned these systems in Chapter 1 when discussing the second of the three strategies lectins use to fool your immune system. As a reminder, these scanners are known as TLRs. That stands for toll-like receptors. But I like to think of them as tiny little radars. They are found in all cell membranes of your body and that of every animal. Every protein, whether it is a virus, lectin, or cell wall, possesses a unique barcode. The TLRs in your body and on your white blood cells of your immune system behave like a Star Wars early warning system, looking for patterns that indicate foreign invaders, mainly bacteria and viruses. The TLRs constantly scan and read the molecular fingerprints or barcodes of whatever protein enters your body. Just as a scanner at the checkout counter reads and interprets the UPC barcode on each product you purchase, identifying it and determining its price. Once the TLRs ascertain whether a particular barcode represents friend or foe, they decide how to respond, either by letting the protein pass without a challenge or by turning on alarms and air raid sirens to alert your body and immune system that an invasion is underway. Now, envision another set of receptors, which act like a USB port on a computer, that literally scan incoming hormones, enzymes, and cytokines for instructions about what those hormones and enzymes want the cell to do. This second set of receptors, known as G-protein-coupled receptors, let's call them G-spotters, serve as docking ports on all cells, similar to those on a space station. When an incoming shuttle wants to unload its cargo and information, its docking mechanism must fit the mechanism on the space station, just as you can only use a charger with a compatible plug to recharge your iPhone 7. Likewise, only if a hormone or enzyme fits into the receptor can information be exchanged. If this communication system within your body sounds fantastical, consider that we take for granted that our cell phones operate using invisible electric pulses emanating from satellites or cell phone towers. Our body's cellular communication works in much the same way. In other words, your immune system's job is to scan for friend or foe patterns and to sound the alarm whenever it encounters recognized patterns of foreign proteins. It then shares the knowledge of the foreign protein patterns with the rest of the body so that troops can be more easily rallied against the enemy in the future. This is what happens when you get a flu shot. A protein from the outside surface of the flu virus is injected into your arm. Your immune system sees this protein, reads its barcode as foreign, attacks it, and then makes scanners on white blood cells and immune signaling proteins that will be permanently on the lookout for the flu protein barcode. If the real flu virus gets in your system, wham, your body is ready. The TLR scanners, remember them as tiny little radars, recognize the incoming missile as a foe. They send out messages to alert the body. The missile defense system is launched, and white blood cells attack the foreign protein like a smart bomb. Result? No more flu virus. Victory. The search for patterns. The description of these scanners won the Nobel Prize for Medicine in 2011. A year later, the discovery of the receptors, G-spotters, was awarded the Nobel Prize for Chemistry. Together, these discoveries allowed me to connect the final dots between patients who had what initially appeared to be completely unrelated problems. As I discovered, the cause of all my patients' problems was that their cells, TLRs and G-spotters, were scanning for patterns, detecting patterns, turning on alarms, or activating cellular machinery. That's because their TLRs and G-spotters were receiving information from input sources that never existed 50 years ago, thanks to a fundamental alteration in the foods people eat and the drugs and personal care products that they, and you, use. In short, you have been hacked. As a consequence, this process has devastated the health of my patients and is almost certainly responsible for your health problems as well. How can I know for sure that this is what is happening and that the constant scanning is largely responsible for an array of health problems? After all, these lethal events are unfolding within you at the cellular, molecular level without your knowledge. The compounds that trigger these receptors are so small, so invisible, that they may seem insignificant. But thanks to the inflammatory hormone measurements and tests that I use, I've been able to track them for the last few years. The information I have gained from working with my patients has helped me find patterns in the immune system and the inflammation it generates that until now have been hidden from view. And what I've found is that lectins and perhaps other foreign proteins play a big role in disrupting communication between cells. Because lectins are master pattern mimickers, much of the information they communicate to cells is inaccurate. And the cause of all of my patients' problems is that their TLRs were inappropriately turning on alarms or that their receptors were receiving inappropriate information. Regardless of my individual patients' health issues, the common denominator was a disruption in messaging. The patterns being detected by their immune system had set off an immunologic and hormonal firestorm within each and every one of them, devastating their health. These conditions resolved when proper communication was restored. And the good news? It's all about making simple changes in your diet and lifestyle. A deadly case of mistaken identity. When you were a kid and got a sore throat, your mother probably worried that it was caused by a bacterium called beta-hemolytic streptococcus, known colloquially as strep throat. If you have kids of your own, you have the same concerns. Strep throat can lead to rheumatic fever, a very severe illness. But rheumatic heart disease, which is what happens after surviving rheumatic fever, is what interests heart surgeons like myself. This condition used to be the primary reason for heart valve replacement, because survivors' valves were almost always destroyed later in life. How valve destruction happens in rheumatic heart disease is important to you, even if you've never had strep throat. The cell wall of the Streptococcus bacteria is made of fats, sugars, and proteins, and is identified by its characteristic bar code. If you've been infected with this particular strain of streptococcus, your immune system makes scanners that patrol your bloodstream, ever on the hunt for the same barcode. Unfortunately, this barcode looks remarkably like the ones on your heart valve cell wall surface. Imagine the streptococcus scanner's surprise as it floats past your heart valves and comes across what it perceives is the streptococcus barcode. The scanners send messages to attack and kill what it mistakenly identifies as streptococcus. Then your immune system goes into full attack mode day after day, year after year, silently and painlessly attacking your heart valve. Finally, the valve is so damaged that it stops functioning, and I'm called in to replace it. As I remove that valve, I notice that the contents of the valve look a lot like the crud inside the coronary arteries on which I do bypasses. That's another clue to the puzzle. Modern coronary artery disease looks just like the immune system attack that causes rheumatic heart disease. I'll tell you what causes that immune attack on your coronary arteries a bit later, but be prepared. Scanner confusion in response to apparently similar barcodes results in unwarranted attacks, and it is the underlying cause of most of our current diseases and health issues. Dangerous imposters. Each protein has a unique barcode, but as you just saw with Streptococcus bacteria, many barcodes are remarkably similar. And some lectins are specifically designed by the plant to resemble compounds that are considered harmful by the body, such as lipopolysaccharides, LPSs, which are molecules that make up the cell walls of certain bacteria in our microbiome. I'm not one for swearing, but I can't resist calling them little pieces of shit, because that's exactly what they are. LPSs are fragments of bacteria that are constantly being produced as bacteria divide and die in your gut. They travel through your gut wall and out into the body by riding on and hiding in saturated fats. Your immune system cannot tell the difference between a whole bacterium and a fragment of one, so it treats LPSs as a threat, just as though a true bacterial infection was present in your blood or elsewhere in your body. Your immune system then summons your white blood cells. I think of them as fighter jets and troops, into the attack, causing inflammation. But the extra bad news is that our immune cells, which are ever on patrol for these foreign bodies, can mistake the pattern of lectins for the pattern of LPSs and attack them, as though bacteria were loose in your system, further inflaming your body as a result. But the most dangerous trick pulled by lectins, which I now see on a daily basis in my patients, is that they bear an uncanny similarity to the proteins on many of our important organs, nerves, and joints. Now, in an abundance of caution, your immune system doesn't want to make a mistake in defending your body by not attacking something important. In the days before antibiotics, you would have been in big trouble if bacteria were present in your body, which is why your immune system is hypersensitive to anything that even remotely resembles a bacterial cell wall or other foreign protein. My colleagues in rheumatology call this response autoimmune disease, but it is actually friendly fire. If an animal eats something containing lectins and gets sick, doesn't feel well, or doesn't thrive, it rapidly figures out that eating that particular plant seed or product isn't a good idea. Remember, a weakened enemy is the best kind of enemy from a plant standpoint. And if you can get your enemy to shoot himself in the foot, you're ahead of the game. When a plant predator, including a human, attacks itself with an immune reaction, it becomes less likely to eat the plant and therefore its babies. Equally as important, it is less likely to reproduce and create more plant predators, again, helping ensure the survival of the plant species. Success story. A god learned how to cure himself. My good friend Tony Robbins called me about 5 years ago looking for help. An eminent guru, a holy man considered a god to 12 million people around the world, was in a hospital in India, awaiting an urgent 5-vessel coronary artery bypass grafting for severe coronary artery disease. Could I intervene and help him avoid surgery? My answer was a resounding yes. It's not every day that I meet a god. The 62-year-old guru's blood work did not look promising. Not only did he have severe coronary artery blockages, he was also terribly diabetic, with hemoglobin A1Cs, a marker of sugar and protein intolerance, of greater than 9.0. Normal is less than 5.6. And advanced kidney failure. When he consulted me via Skype, I asked him if he was indeed a god, and he replied that people call him a god because he performs miracles and cures people. I responded by asking, why doesn't he just cure himself if he performs miracles? His reply, you know how this god thing works. I can cure anyone else, but I can't cure myself. That's what I need you for. We hit it off immediately. The guru was being treated by an Ayurvedic physician, and he ate a traditional Indian diet, heavy on rice, legumes, and naan, a kind of flatbread. He had a classic Delhi belly, a.k.a. a beer belly. When I made it clear that the foods of his faith were the cause of his diabetes, heart disease, and kidney failure, he was shocked. These were the foods recommended by all the gods before him. How could they be so unhealthy? My reply was the same as it is to anyone else who eats healthy. How's all that healthy eating working out for you if you have all these diseases? As Einstein was fond of saying, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. I put the god on the Plant Paradox program, and within a few weeks, his chest pain was gone, and his blood sugar level started to decline. Things were going well for about 3 months, until his blood test results were suddenly terrible again. When we next Skyped, I asked him what happened. Apparently, every 3 months, there is a festival to worship him, and all the monks and his followers shower him with foods for the gods, which he is obliged to eat. This pattern repeated itself for about 2 years. 2 steps forward, 1 step back every 3 months when another festival occurred. Finally, on a Skype call a few years in, I couldn't take it anymore. Aren't you God to your followers? I asked. Yes, he replied. Well, doesn't God make the rules about what God likes to eat and what pleases him? I asked. I never thought about it like that, he said. I will tell my monks and my followers that we all must eat Gundry style to please me. And that's just what he did. Today, the guru's skin has a radiant glow of health. His stress tests on his heart are normal, and his kidney failure is history, as is his diabetes. Without medications, his hemoglobin A1C is an acceptable 5.5 and going down. Oh, and one more thing. His Ayurvedic doctor now eats Gundry style. Each one of us has the power, the green life force energy, to heal from within once the external forces that prevent that natural ability are removed. The god had the power to heal himself, after all. As he and I agreed, I can show you the path, but it is you who must walk it. Patterns causing problems. Another important lesson I've learned from my patients is that your immune system reacts to lectins to a greater or lesser degree depending on who you are, meaning your family history and genetics, and more important, whether those lectins are getting past your previously intact intestinal barrier. It seems simple, right? Not so. In the next chapter, we'll look more closely at our current health crisis, and specifically the rising tide of obesity and related diseases. Most important, we'll look at how to reverse it, because as it turns out, the ability of lectins to mimic other proteins and confuse the body's messaging plays a major role in many, many conditions. By using the forthcoming principles and my updated dietary program, I've seen patients resolve a myriad of health problems, including aching joints, acid reflux, and more. A complete list can be found in the enhancement. Okay. If you've looked through the list, I know what you're thinking. I've cited just about every illness and health complaint out there. How can one thing cause them all? Believe me, 12 years ago, I myself would have tossed this book out the window if you had suggested that everything on this list was caused by consuming lectins in collaboration with chemical and other disruptors that have infiltrated our bodies. However, my experience with tens of thousands of patients is proof that this is in fact the case, and that following my protocol will heal what ails you. What has changed? If we've known about lectins for more than a century, and we eat lectins daily in a huge variety of foods, you'll find a complete list in the enhancement. Why isn't everybody being attacked by lectins? Well, maybe they are. Or, if they weren't attacking us in the past, why are they attacking us now? And what has changed? I have uncovered how lectins are infiltrating our bodies, and we'll look at those disturbing factors in the next two chapters. Chapter 3, Your Gut Under Attack. You've absorbed some complex and surprising concepts in the last two chapters, and there's more to come, so consider this fair warning. Amazing as it may sound, everything I'm about to tell you is backed up by peer-reviewed, published research by scientists from prestigious universities around the world, as well as my own research at my Center for Restorative Medicine. Let me also remind you that the problems you have with your health, and perhaps your weight, are actually caused by very, very small things. You'll understand what I mean by that as we begin to explore the fascinating world that is your gut. You and your holobiome, best friends forever. Within your intestinal tract and mouth and on your skin, and even in a cloud around you, live hundreds of trillions of different minute microbes, bacteria, plus a good number of viruses, molds, fungi, protozoa, and even worms. One of our biggest health misconceptions comes from our collective lack of awareness of who we really are. The real you, or the whole you, is actually what you think of as you, plus those multitudinous microbes. In fact, 90% of all the cells that constitute you are non-human. To go a step further, 99% of all the genes in you are non-human. At first glance, the multiple life forms with which we coexist may seem like an alternate reality. Yet you and your microbes are literally in this life together. Your health is dependent on them, as theirs is on you. At the most basic level, you are not alone. Most of us think that we are totally in charge of the decisions we make and the things we do. Your microbes, or bugs, as I fondly call them, would vigorously disagree. You may recoil at the thought that minute non-human organisms or even simple non-living molecules exert so much power over you, yet we know that this is true. You can think of it this way. You and your bugs can be seen as a country composed of trillions of inhabitants, human and non-human cells alike. The non-human cells are the legal aliens performing work for the country as a whole in a guest worker program. These aliens are housed on their side of the tracks, on our skin and in our intestinal tract, and even specific work zones within the intestinal tract. This multiplicity of microbes has collectively been called the microbiome, although scientists are now using the term holobiome as more descriptive. Holobiome includes not just the microbes in your gut, but also those on your skin and even in the cloud of bacteria surrounding each of us, much like Pigpen in the Peanuts cartoons. Whichever term you prefer, you provide a home for these microbes, and they provide services in return. Yes, they rely on you to feed and house them, but what is initially harder for most of us to accept is that we are equally dependent on them. Without our microbes, we could not live and function. We know this from experiments on germ-free mice, studies that initiated the research on the interaction between a host organism and its microbes. Germ-free mice, which are raised without a microbiome, are shorter and smaller, live shorter lives, and are more susceptible to disease because their immune system never develops properly. As a result, we know how vital it is that you keep your holobiome well-fed and happy. I can't resist sharing a quick story. I entered the state science fair as a fifth grader in 1960, and based on the research from the time into what is now called the holobiome, my project was to build a germ-free mouse environment. Little did I know that decades later, I would be writing about the synergy between human hosts and microbes. As I said, this isn't my first rodeo. Hard at work in your GI tract. Now, let's take a closer look at what is going on in your gastrointestinal GI tract. For many of the guest workers, your gut is where they reside and do their job, breaking down and digesting plant cell walls and extracting energy and shipping it in the form of fats to you. Like all other animals, we are totally dependent on these microbe workers to do this crucial job. Even a termite cannot eat wood. Bacteria in its tiny gut actually do the work to digest the wood and convert it into energy. If they weren't there, the termite would starve. One of the workers' two main jobs is to extract energy from plants that are eaten by their host. The other is to act as a sentinel for the host's immune system. Because there is so much genetic material in the holobiome, some scientists believe, as do I, that we have outsourced much of our immune surveillance, almost like putting our genetic material in the cloud. The prevailing theory is that we have outsourced the initial jobs of detecting friends or foes and of deflecting foes to our holobiome. Where these guest workers reside varies by species, but there are generally three sites for animals to house their workers and break down plant materials. For cows and other ruminants, it is the stomach or multiple stomachs. For gorillas or other great apes, it is the small intestine. For humans, it is the large intestine, colon. To understand where we are going, let's pause for a short anatomy lesson. Your GI tract, which extends from your mouth all the way down to your anus, is actually your skin turned inside out. The inside contents of your intestines are actually outside of you. That's right. The contents of your intestines are every bit as much a part of the outside world as the world that you see around you. Whoa! How can that be? If it's inside of you, how can it be outside? Think of a highway tunnel under a river. Cars entering the tunnel are outside the river when they go into the tunnel, as well as when they come out. As they pass through the tunnel, they're not in the river, are they? Of course not. They're still outside the river, but they happen to be inside a passageway that contains air rather than water. Even though they appear to disappear into the river and emerge from the other side of it, they never were actually in the river. So too, most of the food you swallow, along with your guest workers, appears to be inside you, but is actually outside of you, even though it passes through you. Your intestinal wall serves as a border fence to separate the guest workers from the rest of you. Meanwhile, your skin is the home to trillions of skin flora, microbes, and it has two primary functions. First, to protect you from the outside world, and second, to absorb and get rid of materials. The first of these jobs is the more important, or so we thought. The lining of your intestines is your skin turned inside out and has the same two jobs as what you think of as your skin. However, in this case, the more important job is to absorb materials in the form of food. As a reminder, coiled within your belly, your intestinal surface has the same surface area as a tennis court. But here's the problem. As you now know, the wall that lines your intestines is only one cell thick. These cells are bonded together by tight junctions, which are supposed to prevent anything foreign from breaching the border into your body's tissues and bloodstream. The objective is to keep the contents of your intestines, including your holobiome, where they belong, outside of you. If they get inside of you, all hell breaks loose. Strange but true, a gift from mom. You inherited your initial collection of bugs from your mother. By design, when you exited the birth canal, you were inoculated with her set of microbes to constitute your initial holobiome. This collection of bugs was essential to educate your newborn immune system and its cells, a process that actually starts well before birth. Lactobacilli, the type of bugs that thrive on milk sugar, lactose, don't normally live in your mother's vagina, but during the last 3 months of pregnancy, they migrate there. Would it surprise you to hear then that a mother's breast milk contains complex sugar molecules, oligosaccharides, that her infant cannot digest, but that are necessary for the health and growth of her infant's bugs? And did you know that without a normal set of microbes from your mother, your immune system couldn't develop properly? In fact, if you were born by cesarean section, it takes fully 6 months to build a normal set of microbes and a functioning immune system just because you didn't journey down mom's birth canal. Everything in its place. 5 pounds of organisms, those bacteria, worms, protozoa, fungi, molds, and viruses, collectively known as your holobiome, live in your intestine, your skin, and the air around you, and they help make up the whole that is you. Researchers have identified well over 10,000 different organisms found in the holobiome to date, and the number climbs every year as the Human Microbiome Project expands. Why are those 5 pounds of microbes associated with you? Well, your holobiome plays a major role in your immune system, nervous system, and hormonal system, the whole enchilada of you, and communicates to human cells how things are going in the outside world. The microbes in your GI tract are there to digest things you cannot digest and pass that digested food into you. But they are also there to do battle with things you swallow that are meant to do you harm, including the plant proteins called lectins. How the gut wall should work. Even though these non-human cells that make up your holobiome are essential to your health and well-being, your human cells think these other cells belong outside of you. It's fine to receive messages and nutrients from your microbes as long as they stay on their side of the fence. As the poet Robert Frost famously wrote in Mending Walls, good fences make good neighbors. Your bugs are your close neighbors, but they need to stay on their side of the fence, meaning outside your skin and the lining of your gut. Let me use the example of a nuclear power plant to help you understand how crucial this fence is between your microbes and the rest of your body. Controlled nuclear fission is an important yet extremely dangerous source of power. Uncontained, it represents the atomic bomb. But compartmentalized and controlled, it can power electrical generators and produce non-polluting electrical energy. Supposedly impenetrable containment structures keep the radiation in check. But the danger is so great that all personnel wear radiation detectors, which serve as scanners. Other scanners are positioned around and outside the main reactors. If radiation is detected, the alarm sounds, signaling an imminent threat to health. And as the 2011 meltdown of the Fukushima nuclear plant tragically illustrates, the escape of this toxic nuclear material will damage the areas surrounding the plant, perhaps permanently. Though obviously on a much smaller scale, think about how most of your microbes are housed in your GI tract. Those contents should be contained by the intestinal lining, which acts like the containment vessel of a nuclear reactor to protect you from contamination. Your gut bugs are akin to the nuclear energy. As long as they know their place and remain confined in the outside world of your gut, these organisms are essential for you to function. But in reality, your intestinal wall is being breached on a daily basis, causing numerous and serious issues throughout the rest of your body. Is it any wonder that many days you feel like you're suffering a meltdown? Keeping intestinal microbes in their place is difficult because the intestinal barrier has two somewhat contradictory jobs. Not only must the cells that line your intestines keep lectins out, they must simultaneously let nutrients in. That's a daunting task. Again, you have only a single layer of locked-together mucosal cells, called enterocytes, in charge of preventing unwanted inhabitants of the GI tunnel from escaping and getting into you. Success story. The typical vegan diet doesn't cut it. An 80-year-old cookbook writer specialized in vegan cookery, meaning that her diet had a heavy reliance on grains and beans. She had collaborated with Dr. John McDougall, who was one of the first proponents of an all-plant diet. When I met the writer, she was extremely thin and had severe arthritis in her hands. Tests revealed that she also had severe lupus as well as celiac disease, classic manifestations of lectins breaching the gut wall. I placed her on the Plant Paradox program, and the lupus and celiac markers quickly resolved. Despite her newfound health, my patient decided to retry her old way of eating what she called a normal vegan diet of grains and beans. The reaction was a tenfold increase in lupus markers, diminished kidney function, lupus nephritis, and increased congestive heart failure. This time, the writer saw the light and returned to my program, with the happy result that all her issues once again resolved. Please remember this story when we talk about reintroducing lectins in part two. What should and should not pass through the gut wall? Only tiny single molecules of digested food should pass through the intestinal wall. So how does the good stuff in that salad and bowl of soup you had for lunch ultimately get through your intestinal wall? Simply put, in order to cross the border checkpoint from your GI tract into you, all food has to be broken down into individual amino acids from protein, individual fatty acids from fat, and individual sugar molecules from sugars and starches. These small, single molecules provide energy, calories, and nutrients. Acids, enzymes, and yes, your microbial guest workers do all that work of digesting big molecules for you. Your mucosal cells then literally bite off a single molecule of amino acids, fatty acids, and sugar, pass it through the body of the cell, and release it into your portal veins or lymph system abutting the back of these cells. These tiny molecules go through the system without ever having to break through the locked arms of the tight junctions of mucosal cells. When all is working well, the big molecules remain outside where they belong because they are literally too big for the cells of the intestinal wall to swallow them. How come? First, your mucosal cells can't bite off more than they can chew. Second, if everything is functioning properly, big molecules should not get through. If they do appear across the border, your immune system concludes that a foreign invader is lurking and sounds the alarm. Breaching the gut wall. This is a great system, except when it isn't. As you might suspect, things don't always work the way they are supposed to. Thanks to changes in what we eat, how foods are grown, and other causes, like consuming over-the-counter painkillers, particularly non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, lectins and lipopolysaccharides, LPSs, now breach the intestinal border on a daily basis. With the exception of WGA, lectins are big proteins, and you now know that big proteins can't normally get through the intestinal wall without difficulty. But lectins are adept at prying apart the tight junctions between the cells that make up your intestinal mucosal border. This breach also allows larger molecules to pass through into the body, where they too wreak havoc. And when lectins, LPSs, remember, I think of these cell walls of certain bacteria as little pieces of shit, which they literally are, or both escape from your gut and into your body, your immune system perceives this as an attack, goes on high alert, and signals your body to store fat and supplies for the war effort. Simultaneously, lectins bind to and block the border crossings of each intestinal cell so that vitamins and other nutrients can't be absorbed. If lectins cause all the problems listed in the enhancement, why haven't other healthcare practitioners told you about this? My only answer is you can't see unless your eyes are open. Most doctors and nutritionists are completely unaware of lectins and their effects, which is why to them it would appear that most people are able to eat lectins, including gluten, and not experience any ill effects. The key word in that last sentence is appear. Success story. Cured of Crohn's disease. I met Jill W. on Skype a couple of years ago. A 20-year-old college junior, she was on a full scholarship provided by the foundation one of my patients had started to encourage students to go into careers that study immunology. My patient had suffered from Crohn's disease, a disabling autoimmune disease of the bowel, which is treated with transplant anti-rejection drugs. I put her on the Plant Paradox program, and within 3 months, she was cured of Crohn's. And, as a side effect, had lost 50 pounds. Needless to say, she was delighted with the turn of events, so she shared the 2-page Plant Paradox program food list with Jill, her scholarship student, who also suffered from Crohn's. An eminent professor of gastroenterology at the Mayo Clinic was treating Jill at the time. My patient asked if I would talk with her, and I said, of course. Jill began our conversation by telling me that when her sponsor had sent her the Plant Paradox list, she was suspicious. She had been on every diet for Crohn's without success. Moreover, her professor and doctor had assured her that Crohn's was genetic, that was his area of research, and that diet had nothing to do with it. With a sheepish look on her face, she told me that to humor her sponsor, she began the Plant Paradox program. Then her face lit up on the video monitor. After 2 weeks, I had the first normal bowel movement of my life, and they have been normal ever since. But 2 days ago, I called my doctor at the Mayo Clinic with the exciting news that my Crohn's was cured by diet. He told me that it was a placebo effect because diet has nothing to do with Crohn's and that my cure was all in my mind. I was so upset, she continued, that I got off the phone and went into the kitchen where my mother was baking Christmas cookies. I ate 2 of them. A few minutes later, it was like a bomb went off in my stomach. That night, the cramps and diarrhea returned. I immediately went back on the Plant Paradox program, and all is well now. But Dr. Gundry, why didn't my doctor believe that it was the food all along that was causing my Crohn's? How can he not see that? I told her, as I'll tell you again, your doctor can't see unless his eyes are open. First of all, there's no way to know that lectins are causing problems if you don't even know what lectins are. Second, even an awareness of lectins doesn't mean you understand the implications of what they do. Continue listening to see how my eyes were open. Soon, your eyes will be as well. And I'll also provide you with the tools to repair your gut lining and restore your health. Remember, much of what goes on in your body is undetectable by conventional means. What if lectins are doing harm, but it's not obvious or not immediately obvious? My patient's blood work certainly suggested that damage was occurring, suggesting that lectins or something that looked remarkably like them were getting through the locked arm mucosal barrier. But how could lectins suddenly get through after eons during which they couldn't? What had changed? A clue emerges. I was perplexed, to say the least. Then about 12 years ago, I ran into the head of pathology in the hall of my hospital. He said, "Hey, you trained as a general surgeon before becoming a heart surgeon. What do you know about intestinal webs?" I told him that I had never heard of them. "Neither had he," he replied, and proceeded to tell me about a woman in her 50s who had come in with intestinal obstruction and was immediately rushed into the operating room, where a large part of her small intestine, which was swollen and blocked in several areas, had to be removed. When the pathologist opened the bowel, he discovered webs of tissue, like washers on the fitting of a garden hose, which almost completely blocked the entire interior of the tube. Only pinhole openings remained. The pathologist had never seen anything like it. Intrigued, I asked where the webs had come from. He didn't know yet, but he researched it, and sure enough, it's actually quite common in people who regularly use NSAIDs, such as Advil or Motrin, both brands of ibuprofen, or Aleve, Naprosyn, Mobic, Celebrex, and aspirin. All but aspirin were introduced in the early 1970s for pain and fever relief and as an arthritis medication in lieu of aspirin. Prolonged use of aspirin was clearly associated with damage to the stomach lining. But because other NSAIDs did not damage the stomach, drug companies herald them as nothing short of miraculous. My next question to my colleague was how these NSAIDs cause intestinal webs to form. His reply was that he didn't care, now that he knew what the webs were. But, being the curious type, I started investigating, and in doing so, I opened a Pandora's box and have never looked back. In brief, NSAIDs do not damage the stomach lining, which we can view with a gastroscope. Instead, they damage the lining of the small intestine, which is beyond the reach of a scope. Because we could not see their ill effects, NSAIDs have done extreme damage to the barrier that keeps not just lectins, but also LPSs out of you. Who let the dogs out? Friendly bacteria, which populate the innermost layer of cells in the gut, the mucus layer, right next to the intestinal cell border, thrive on complex resistant starches called fructooligosaccharides, FOS. These beneficial bacteria not only live in mucus, they also stimulate mucosal cells to make more of this good stuff. Mucus then acts as a moat to trap lectins and block them from passing through the intestinal border. The more mucus you produce, the more resistant you are to lectins, unless you're regularly taking NSAIDs. Mucus isn't confined to your gut. It turns up as the snot in your nose, where it likewise traps foreign proteins and keeps them out of your body. Yep, It's not as good. Copious research published over the last half century reveals that gulping down apparently harmless NSAIDs is like swallowing a live grenade. These drugs blow gaping holes in the mucus-lined intestinal barrier. As a result, lectins, LPSs, and living bacteria are able to deluge the breaks in your levee, flooding your body with foreign invaders. Inundated by these foreign proteins and other invaders, your immune system does what it does best, producing inflammation and pain. This pain, in turn, prompts you to down another NSAID, promoting a vicious cycle, which can ultimately result in your seeking out prescription-level pain relievers. In other words, that harmless Aleve or Advil is the pharmaceutical industry's gateway drug, as you will discover in the next chapter. A course of antibiotics, stomach acid reducers, or even changes in our food supply also allow bad bacteria to move in and take over, just as NSAIDs do. Increased intestinal permeability from lectins and LPSs, as well as the regular use of NSAIDs and acid-reducing drugs, produces what is commonly called leaky gut syndrome. Although, along with others, I originally thought that leaky gut was an isolated condition affecting a few unfortunate individuals, now I am convinced that leaky gut underlies all our disease issues, just as Hippocrates posited. Adding insult to injury, consuming the lectins in whole grain products and other baked goods, including even gluten-free varieties made with the rising agent known as transglutaminase, independently makes the intestinal permeability worse. Remember that for centuries, the bran from these grains was discarded, making whole grains a relatively recent addition to our diet and a recent problem as a result. The real cause of autoimmune diseases. Now listen carefully. What I'm about to tell you will shatter your current beliefs about conditions commonly called autoimmune diseases. If you suffer from Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, microscopic colitis, hypothyroidism, or Hashimoto's thyroiditis, lupus, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, Sjogren's syndrome, dry eyes and mouth, scleroderma, systemic sclerosis, psoriasis, Raynaud's syndrome, dermatomyositis, fibromyalgia, osteoarthritis, that's plain old arthritis, or any other, that's right, any autoimmune disease. The good news is that you can eliminate it without using drugs. I get to see it happen every day. And the answer lies in healing your leaky gut, which we will discuss in part two. Modern research has confirmed Hippocrates' belief that all of these diseases begin in the gut and can be cured by healing the gut. Strictly from word-of-mouth recommendations, 50% of my practice for the past 10 years has involved the treatment and cure of autoimmune diseases. And based on copious and rigorous measurements of laboratory and clinical markers of disease activity at my institute, I, along with others, am now convinced that all autoimmune diseases are caused by alterations in the good bugs and the bad bugs that live in your gut and mouth and on your skin, along with a change in the permeability of your gut wall and mouth and gums. What impacts that permeability? As I said before, NSAIDs, antibiotics, acid-blocking drugs such as Nexium and Prilosec, and the biocide Roundup all change your gut flora and the mucus layer of your gut. This compromises the barrier wall of your intestines on a daily basis, thereby allowing lectins in. And this confluence of forces prompts your immune system to unleash an attack on you in a classic case of mistaken identity caused by molecular mimicry. As a reminder, molecular mimicry is caused by our immune cells attacking proteins on cells or organs that resemble the patterns on lectins and LPSs. The spectrum of deleterious effects from leaky gut initially occurs out of sight. But when the damage to your intestinal wall becomes so severe that you lose the absorptive part of your intestine, it makes its presence known by less protein showing up in blood tests. Much as a sponge or chamois cloth can absorb liquids, under normal circumstances, the intestine is capable of taking up large amounts of proteins, fats, and sugars until it can't. To understand just how insidious this is, think of how smoking cigarettes can silently destroy the oxygen-exchanging surface of the lungs long before a diagnosis of emphysema or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, is made. Likewise, lectins can silently savage the absorptive layer of your intestines. In both situations, by the time the damage is apparent, it is often thought to be too late for repairs. In my practice, I often see skinny people who cannot absorb nutrients no matter how much they eat. In fact, much of what we assume is a normal part of the aging process is actually the cumulative effect of lectin toxicity. But unlike COPD, this damage can be repaired. When a city is bombed in wartime, the residents flee and the city cannot be rebuilt until the bombing ceases and the people return. Think of lectins as incoming bombs. In order to repair the damage, you must stop eating lectins, and I'm going to show you how. A symbiotic relationship. The major role your microbes play in essential jobs such as digestion, elimination, and gut health is just the tip of the iceberg. Microbes are also the main defenders of your health. They constitute a complex ecosystem and are in constant communication with your brain and the rest of your body, sending and receiving messages. Long before instant messaging became a way for us to communicate via our electronic devices, these microbes have been transmitting messages back and forth to control our hormones, our appetite, and our preferred foods, among other functions. You and your microbes coexist in what biologists call a mutually symbiotic relationship. Your existence depends upon them, and their existence depends upon you. The animal kingdom offers many examples of symbiosis. For example, a water bird known as a plover picks food off the teeth of a crocodile. The bird gets its dinner and the croc gets clean teeth, which enables it to keep hunting. Other birds, such as the oxpecker or tick bird, ride around on the backs of large African mammals, consuming the annoying insects that flock to them. As just one example of the symbiotic relationship with your holobiome, certain microbes on your skin will fight to the death to heal a wound and protect you from other microbes that harm you. The good microbes defend you because you and they are in a symbiotic relationship. The deal is, you feed them and they protect you. As such, your gut buddies are invested in the care and upkeep of their home. They even communicate their happiness by making most of the feel-good hormones, such as serotonin, for you. If you are taking an antidepressant, let me assure you that your gut buddies have left the building. However, if you alter this relationship, the roles can change. Drive off the good bugs or let the bad bugs in, and it's as though gang members have taken over a pleasant neighborhood. They have no interest in the care and upkeep of you. They are only out for themselves. They also hijack the ancient communication system between the normal gut denizens and your brain, making you crave the foods that they need, namely sugars, fats, junk foods, and fast foods. This hijacking